How to grow at your own comfortable pace. This is the Early Days Podcast. Hey everybody, welcome to the Early Days Podcast, a show about the hustle, the excitement, the doubts, the success, the failures, the ups and downs of building a business from scratch. My name is Marin, and with my co-founder Julian, we interview fellow entrepreneurs about their experience of starting businesses. As we are building our own company and documenting our early days, we wanted to go behind the scenes with other entrepreneurs and find out what their early days, weeks, months, and years were like. This week, we had the pleasure of talking to Dr. Adam Moore, a mental health specialist, counselor, and an entrepreneur. Adam Moore is a licensed marriage and family therapist and co-owner of Sela Health, which operates mental health counseling offices across the US. We had a wide-ranging conversation with Adam about how he and his wife are building a sustainable business at a slow, comfortable pace. We dive deeper into that topic and discuss the advantages and thinking behind such a strategy. In addition, we explored the thinking behind adopting a strategy of engagement on Instagram and online as a means to build deep, lasting relationships with people. We also covered the journey Adam has been through while transitioning to full-time entrepreneurship, for a long time maintaining a balance between full-time job and building the business. This episode is very relevant for those who are running small businesses and are at a stage where they need to consider expansion or switching to 100% involvement in the business. Make sure you check out Adam's work. And now, without further ado, enjoy our conversation with Dr. Adam Moore.
So, my name is Adam Moore. I am the owner and clinical director of it's a group of mental health clinics. So the parent company that my wife and I own is called Sela Health, and then we own offices in Utah, in the United States, and Las Vegas, Nevada. So there's four total offices. We have 15 employees. We've been around for about 5 years. And it's gone great. I just quit my full-time job for a university about, 1 year ago, actually, this month, or in August. It was a year. And it was terrifying to do that because I've never, you know, run a business before without having something, my backup, you know, my full-time job or whatever. But and we actually did take a pretty big pay cut to make the change. But it's absolutely worth it. It's been amazing so far this year to be completely on our own, and that's where we're at. We're just going to keep growing and see where it goes.
Nice. So you managed. You said you've been building the offices for 5 years, but you just left your job 1 year ago. So how did you manage to? Because it's quite a it's quite a big accomplishment building those four places and having so many people while still a side project.
Well, and that's the challenge, right? Is you know, unless you're going to work 100 hours a week and never sleep, how do you do it? I'm very fortunate in that my wife was able to work from home on the business, building it with me while I was working at the university. And so I would take my lunch breaks and go supervise the therapists over there. On my lunch breaks, or you know, in the evenings, I would be returning phone calls for the business, or creating content, or whatever we were doing to get going. And then during the day, my wife, just from her cell phone and laptop at our house, would take phone calls for the business and do all the accounting and the payroll and things like that. And yeah, we definitely. You know, there was a lot of bootstrapping in the beginning, a lot of just survival, whatever we have to do, very little sleep. We still don't sleep much. I mean, we sleep probably six or seven hours a night, which is not too bad, but I wish I could sleep more, but that's just the life of a business owner. And it's interesting because I did not understand social media at all. I just like 3 months ago, I just barely started making sense of it because I read Gary Vaynerchuk's book, Crush It, a few months ago, and finally the light bulb hit. So we built the entire business really without almost any legitimate use of social media ourselves. There was content being shared that was created, but it was being shared by other people, and I was only vaguely aware of what was going on. So we started, without social media, really without a lot of it. And now we're finally adding that component to see where it leads us.
You mentioned going alone, going full time on your business last year or 1 year. What factors were in place to convince you that it's the right time?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I had a number of conversations with our accountant because I was worried. I mean, the job I had before was so good. I was salaried. I was getting paid well. I had a pension that would have been worth probably $1 million at retirement. I had a 401k. I had with matching and all that, I had 42 paid vacation and sick days a year, which I don't know how it is in other countries, but here in the US, that's like unheard of. So
7 times normal.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was amazing. I had an amazing job, and that was part of what sort of took me so long to make that decision to finally be done, because it was like walking away from that was extremely difficult. There were so many worries about whether we'd be able to replace the income and afford the paying for the insurance ourselves and all those things. I sat down with my accountant and he looked at the numbers for the business and he said, well, you're going to take a pretty big pay cut this year because you'll have to be paying out of pocket a lot of the things that the university was covering. But then he said, and this guy, he's a very nice guy, and he's, you know, he was actually within a year of retiring, so he's a little older. He said, if you don't quit your job and go full time with this business, you'll be stupid. That was the actual phrase he said. So I figured if my really conservative accountant thinks I'd be stupid to keep my full time job, then I guess it's time to leave. So I needed a nudge from someone else.
And so you made that full commitment, and did you have a safety net of going back to that job, or you knew that once you left, you couldn't go back?
No, there was no, once I quit the job, that was the end of it. In fact, they asked me what my opinion was on who they should hire, and I had them hire a good friend of mine who I thought would be a good fit for the job. So he moved his family for that job. So once I left, that was the end, and I was terrified for the first, month or two, even though we'd been around for, 5 years or just a little bit under 5 years, I guess around four when I quit. I was totally afraid that somehow it was all going to fall apart. And that fear left me it took about 4 to 6 months really to be completely, in that trusting state that things were going to be okay. Now I feel great.
Right. You mentioned, I think, that your wife does the payroll. Does that mean that you have employees at your business as well?
Yeah, so including my wife and I, so we count as employees because we're on the payroll. We have 15 total. So there are my wife's the executive director. I'm the clinical director. And then we've got an office manager, an office assistant, and then or two, I can't, it's hard for me to remember. My wife manages a lot more of that than I do. And then there's 11 other therapists that work for us.
Right. That must be a huge responsibility and a lot of pressure when you went full time on the business.
Yeah. I think, the anxiety for me is because we don't allow our employees to work for other people while working for us, because it creates a conflict of interest. And we basically say, we will give you an amazing life. We'll give you a great job with really good pay and benefits and all of that. And in exchange, we ask for loyalty, that you're not going to be doing work on the side or trying to build a practice on the side, so that we can trust them fully and they trust us. And I've got people who are buying homes on their income with our business. And so, yeah, I have a little bit of panic and anxiety about, well, if this business doesn't continue to succeed, I've got people's mortgages that are relying on their income. So it's a little bit stressful, but after 5 years, I mean, the statistics out there about small business startups are that about 80% fail within the first 5 years. So for me, hitting the 5-year mark was a big deal, because it meant that we had sort of crossed that threshold And, you know, I feel like as long as we continue to do what we're doing, but also evolve with the times and with different needs of the market, then I feel like we'll continue to be successful and I don't have to panic very much.
Oh, that's a good point. I'm curious, going back to the very, very early start, early days, if we can call that, how much did it take you before you opened your second location?
Let's see here. Boy, that's a good question. That's going back. I don't have a great memory, so we'll see what I can pull off here. So we opened our first location, which was, you know, we didn't have much money. I mean, we borrowed a few thousand dollars from my parents, of all things, because we didn't even have cash. And so we took out basically a loan, and I paid 18% interest, which was crazy. I don't know what I was thinking. I could have gone to a bank and got 10%. I just didn't know that. So, but we opened that office. It was just above a pizza shop in town because it was low cost and that was what we could afford at the time. And we were in there probably, I would say, at least a year before we opened the second location. And the second location, we were able to open just a single office, like an executive suite in another city, because it was close to where one of our employees lived and he wanted to be able to work closer to home. And we knew that there was already a market in that city. We had a lot of people driving, you know, 30 minutes to get to our office from that city and cities around there. So we knew that we would be able to open it and have an immediate, you know, return on investment with it. So I think it was about a year before we opened that second office. But if my wife were here, she could tell you probably the exact date.
And to continue on that, I'm just curious, because now you said you have four locations, right?
Yep, that's right.
So was it an exponential growth? So you were just gradually growing to 1, 2, 3, and year 4, you have 4th offices? Or was it like more sudden, and after the second one, let's say you suddenly had 2 at the same time? I'm just curious about that.
No, yeah. So I believe in gradual growth. I actually do not believe in explosive viral type growth in businesses, because most businesses don't have the infrastructure in place to be able to deal with explosive growth. In fact, that is actually one of the risk factors, if you can believe it, for businesses that you know, to survive, is dealing with the big fast growth that sometimes happens when they have a product or service that the market really is interested in. Because two things can happen. One is the demand can really outstrip what you're capable of supplying. And if you can't catch up to that, then you might miss that wave. And then somebody comes out with a similar product and they're better funded or whatever, and then you're done. Or you expand too quickly, you take out loans, you get investment capital or whatever it is to try to meet that demand. And then maybe the demand fluctuates and then you have all of this overhead and suddenly you're in trouble because there's not enough demand anymore to, you know, to match what you're trying to offer. So for me, I think slow growth, methodical, careful growth is the best growth. So yeah, we just have opened offices as it has made sense. And we just, you know, we've been in Utah for years, and we just barely this year, just before year 5, we opened a Las Vegas, Nevada office because one of our employees was going to be moving there with her husband. And at first I was like, oh, that's really sad, we'll miss you. But then my wife said, well, hey, why not open an office there? You know, we trust her. She's an awesome employee. Let's try that. And so we just opened that 3 months ago, and we're getting plugging along with that. So yeah, it's just sort of slow, and it's as the need arises.
And you've been like you used external funding basically only the first time, and after that you've been growing just from basically the proceeds coming from the business. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. And so, you know, we really could have, I mean, if I had gotten together all of my life savings, which, you know, wasn't much, and every dollar I could scrape together, we could have opened on our own without that, you know, money from my parents. But for me, that was just a little bit of a buffer to keep us from drowning when we first opened. I actually have I have an aversion to the idea of taking on external funding. Just because the moment you take on external funding, you give up, of course, a percentage of ownership in most cases, unless you're doing loans. And I think loans are very dangerous. I think you have to be very cautious about taking about business loans. But I don't really like the idea of taking on funding in exchange for ownership, because then what happens is, you know, our business is a labor of love for us. I mean, we care deeply about the service we offer. We care deeply about our clients. It's very personal for us. We care deeply about our employees. Everything we do is personal. And investors don't feel that way. It's not personal for them. It is all numbers. And so the moment an investor gets involved and they, you know, don't like the decision you're making, because you're making a decision based on, you know, your personal care about something, and they don't think it's a financial win, then you're going to be at odds. And to me, that then causes a lot of anxiety and angst. And I just couldn't function that way. So again, I would rather have slow growth, or even, you know, maybe not even grow to the size of a huge corporation in exchange for retaining a control over it and be able to do it the way that we feel, you know, our conscience dictates that we can do it out of love and our passion. And that's not, a lot of people can't do that. You know, a lot of people, especially there are various business types that need $1 million or $10 million to even really get going. And so there really isn't a choice for people. But for me, if I can avoid it, I will.
Yeah, I completely agree that we kind of feel the same way about it, because starting the business on the side was where we started, because we didn't want to have a boss. We wanted to do it for ourselves. So any time you take even, you know, $1 of investment, you instantly shift that mindset to actually having someone that you need to, you know, answer to. So it defeats the whole purpose of starting your own business. Completely agree with you on that one. You mentioned that you built quite a substantial part of the business you have so far without using social media. And I've seen you now. I mean, I follow your social media accounts, and you're very active on it. Can you just take us through how was it to build the business without social media? And then second part of the question would be how you started incorporating that medium and mediums to build it from now on.
Absolutely. So, you know, when we first started, I'm a slow adopter of technology and everything. I'm the guy that doesn't upgrade his, you know, iPhone operating system until like 4 or 5 months after it comes out, because I don't know, I have this anxiety about new things. So I'll eventually get into everything that people are doing in terms of marketing and social and stuff, but I'm always behind the curve, and that's probably a liability. That's not a good thing. Most people fare better when they jump on top of things and learn it as they go. But when we first opened, so we relied heavily on word of mouth. So for me, offering amazing value to our clients and amazing service was a huge deal. So for example, I made sure that I positioned us on the lower end of the cost, you know, for the service. So I looked at average counseling costs in Utah, and I made sure that we were, you know, we're not going to undervalue ourselves, but I made sure we were on the lower end so that people felt like they weren't paying the top dollar for the counseling, but then that we were offering really, really, really good service to people. As an example, and this is still true today, even though I'm the owner and we get phone calls, you know, certainly from all over Utah, but we get phone calls from all over the United States and even some other countries, people asking for help. And most people we can't help directly right now with counseling, because we have to have licenses in the states where people reside. So I've been trying to build, you know, resources to help people who don't live close to us. But I still take every phone call and I respond to every email personally. even if I just give people a 10 or 15 or 20 minute phone call, and that makes a big difference. People feel like, you know, and it's true that I really, really care about helping people, even if there's no way I will make $1 off of that phone call. And what that does is that people then go, wow, these guys are very serious about caring. And eventually that comes around to benefit you in some way, because people, they know someone that lives close by, or they, you know, they figure out what other services you're offering and they purchase those, or they just say nice things about you on social media or to their friends. Being kind and actually caring about people has a huge return on investment, and it makes you feel good and not like you're just out there trying to make money. So that was one thing that we did in the very beginning, was make sure that we were, you know, providing low cost, not super low cost, but, you know, relatively, I guess is the word I'm thinking of, relatively low cost for high value. So that's the first thing. You know, certainly we put energy into our social or search engine optimization for our website, so that we came up on, you know, keywords and things like that. That helped a lot, even though we weren't investing in social media at the time. And then also just not panicking about slow growth. I mean, whenever you open a business, growth in the beginning is always slow. And if people start to panic and feel like they're doing something wrong, there's a certain level of patience that you have to have. And as long as everyone knows what the expectations are, it's not a big deal. When we first hired people, we did hire people that it was their side job. You know, they worked somewhere else. They could see a few hours of clients in our office. And that worked in the beginning, because then nobody was relying on it for survival. We shifted later into the you can only work for us thing as we got bigger and had more clients. So very much it was social, but it was personal social in the beginning. We added social media. I mean, my wife started creating Instagram and Facebook and Twitter accounts for our various, you know, businesses or subsets of the business. But, you know, she can't post consistently on all of those platforms. When I finally sort of woke up just a few months ago, really, like back in June, I woke up about social media, realized that we could be doing so much more. I just decided I'm going to post every single day, and sometimes twice a day. I'm going to post every day, and I'm going to put some content out there that is intended to help a person. So not just inspirational, which I think is helpful, but that basically I'm speaking to people and saying, this is my life experience, or this is my professional experience, and I hope that connects with your experience, and here's what I've done about it. So hopefully that helps you. And my experience has been that, yeah, I mean, they're getting legitimate help off of my social media posts. Like, people are like, oh my gosh, can I quote that? Or that's a great thought. Or I never thought about it that way, and now that's shifting the way I feel about whatever, my relationships or my self-esteem or whatever. So adding value on social media. And then the thing that I see you guys doing is the exact same thing I do, and that is I'm engaging in dialogue and community and conversations. I'm not just like posting out there and then hoping people like it. I'm investing in the relationships just like I would in real life.
Yeah, I think that's huge for us as well, because when we started, we just posted stuff.
And I have a question. Sorry for interrupting you. Do you see a direct correlation between the engagement that's happening on social media and the bottom line of the business, so financially?
No, not today. And I expect that to be actually a number of years down the road, for a couple of reasons. One, because again, our primary business is in-person, face-to-face counseling in very localized areas, that only the places where the offices are. And the majority of my social media followers right now do live in the areas where we practice, but I'm trying to appeal to everybody everywhere, right? And build connections in that way. So no, I don't see a direct impact on the bottom line. I don't know that I've earned a dollar off of my social media work right now, but for me, I'm a long-term, slow build investment kind of guy. So I build a really engaged community of people that know that I care about them, that know that I'm not just engaging with them because I see them as a number, as a follower, as a whatever, but that I actually care about their life in some small way. Then I'm just going to trust that somehow that will turn into something beautiful. I don't even have a plan really right now, to be completely honest. I don't have a social media, master plan where I'm like, and here's how I'm going to make money off of this, because I actually get so much value off of just connecting with people and feeling like I'm making a difference, that's enough reward for me right now. And we're doing well enough financially with the other business that I don't have to worry about it. But if it happens down the road that it turns into a revenue source, then that's great. You know, that's fantastic. And I trust that it will, if I continue to care and do things the way I've done.
Yeah, I think as well, I agree completely with you. I think it takes time to build an audience, and the tricky thing about running a business is you always have kind of the revenue and the finances in the back of your mind, so you kind of need to really adopt or be authentic about providing value without any expectation. And then right. I do believe, like, you do somewhere down the line that turns into customers or whatever, but I think it's very important just to set off with that mindset of having no expectation and just seeing what way you can help through your content or engagement or whatever it is.
Well, and people know the difference. I mean, people are smart. Human beings are very capable of perceiving when something is real and when something is fake. And so if people see me on social media interacting in a way that makes them feel like I'm using them for my benefit, they'll pick up on it quick and they'll stop following me. They'll disengage from what I'm doing. So I have to make sure that I show up to all of my relationships, including ones with, you know, that are just comments or pictures or whatever on the internet. I have to show up to all of those like I would to any relationship in life, and know that if I don't actually care, then I shouldn't be there, or I need to figure out how to care. And that's one of the reasons I follow so few accounts on social media, is I only follow accounts where I feel like I can personally invest in what they're doing. I can care about their message or their mission or who they are as a person and respond and engage with them. And if I can't do that, then I'm most likely not going to follow the account. And so, I'm trying to build that community, one individual, one person, one connection at a time. And certainly there'll come a day, hopefully there'll come a day when I have enough people that are following me and that I'm following them, that I probably can't make as many personal connections as I would like to. But hopefully by that time, I will have built up enough connection with those people that they know that it's not because I'm ignoring them, but just because I've gotten really, really busy with life. But I'll still engage as I can. So I don't know. We'll see. That'll be an interesting process to see how that evolves. I'm small enough now on social media that I can deeply invest, as deeply as you can invest in a square picture and a few paragraphs per person right now. We'll see.
Yeah, you know, I think we have a similar strategy on that one. So which platforms are you currently active on? Is it on Instagram, or how are you guys thinking about, like, the whole spectrum of social media?
Yeah. So Instagram is where I'm most active by far. I've had a professional Facebook page for years, and I had, like, 10 people following it or something. And I neglected it. I didn't put any energy into it. And I've just basically what I've done now is I've started posting everything that I post on most of what I post on Instagram. I will just pass it through to my professional Facebook page. And then occasionally I'll create some native content for just the Facebook page, like a long form video or something, which I want to do more of. I'm really not on Twitter. And I need to be, I should be, but I feel like I don't understand Twitter like I figured out Instagram, and so I need to look more carefully at that. I do have a podcast, which I try to do weekly, but it's usually about every 10 to 12 days. And that's just one more piece of content that I have people engage with. And that's pretty much it right now. I'm not on a lot of other platforms. I'm really trying to invest my limited time where I feel like I'm getting the most return on investment. I've thought about Snapchat, but again, it's a platform that I don't know that I fully understand. And so I'm still trying to figure these things out. And I'm the kind of guy where I will always be slow with things. I'll always be methodical and careful, and I will not be in as many places as I should, but it hasn't hurt me yet. I'm still finding a lot of success in doing more of like the fewer locations and deeper investment in those locations.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, as long as you're self-aware about it, of course, no one approach works for everyone. Right. So, I mean, you have to be confident using the platform. Just before we wrap up, can you quickly just give us a kind of a overview of the podcast and what kind of conversations you're having there, what kind of people are inviting there?
Yeah, so the podcast is called Pocket Therapist, and it's a combination of me doing individual, you know, no guest, topical dialogue. So I'll pick a topic and then I'll talk about my opinion on it, some mental health or relationship topic. Something that I'm really interested in is how language affects relationships. So how the way that we use certain words or certain phrases instead of other words or phrases, how that affects the outcome of the conversation. So I try to have dialogues about that on there. But I've noticed it's sort of evolved. A lot of people will message me questions. And so I'm doing a lot of answering questions on there. So that even the podcast is actually really personal, because I'll have an entire episode dedicated to answering one person's question from Instagram. And I think that seems pretty rare. I think most podcasts are generally just topical or they have guests. But I'm really invested in, you know, focusing on the one person's question. And then I'll have some guests on there, but really right now, I've got my wife that comes on, and she's been on once, and we're going to do another one. And then I've got, like I said, I've got 11 employees. They're all therapists with different expertise. They all want to be on the podcast as well. So because I'm really slow, I've only had one of my employees on. So over the course of the next, you know, 6 months or whatever, I'll try to get every employee on the podcast, my wife and I, and then myself. And then eventually we'll see what happens with it. You know, I'm sure it will evolve and transform and go different places, but that's where it's at right now.
I think that's a very fresh format. It's usually just, yeah, like us, we have guests on, but I think also the personal connection and viewpoint is also very valuable in that format.
Yeah.
And to be respectful of your time and to wrap it up, what are some of the handles, websites that people should check out? And of course, we're going to be linking them in the episode description as well, but just to mention them now.
Yeah, I can mention a few of them. So probably my major clinical area that I focus on, not probably, but actually the main area I focus on is I help people when they are struggling with compulsive either pornography use. So they're like becoming addicted to porn. They can't stop and it's actually wrecking their life, or other sexual behaviors. So I'm, you know, basically sexual addiction, that's my main area of focus. So that's what a lot of my resources are geared toward. So, you know, if people go to my professional webpage, adammoore.com, or they go to either of our counseling practice web pages, Utah Valley Counseling, eating disorders, and other topics where people really get stuck and need some help recovering and changing. So, you know, you've sort of caught me at this really, I think, fun early point. Even though I'm 40 and I've been doing this for a handful of years, I still feel like I'm really early in my career. early in my what my offering is to people. And so I think this is a fun point for people to get involved and to watch things grow and develop, because, you know, who knows if 5 or 10 or 15 years from now, things will be much different. And I think it's fun to follow people when they're just starting out or just really just starting to see success. Because I don't know, I think it's fun to be able to say, hey, I was there in the beginning. I was the first one to purchase a product from them. I was talking to them on Instagram when nobody knew who they were, and now they've got 5 million followers, and that's not only fun, but that can be a really cool way to build your own community. Because if you've got people that you look at and go, these guys are going somewhere, or these ladies are going somewhere, and you get on the ground floor and can stay connected to them, that's huge for connections later when they get, you know, when they've got 5 million followers or whatever. So
yeah,
great, Adam. Just because I think we might have dropped you when you were mentioning exactly the links and the handle, can you just quickly repeat them?
Oh yeah, that's fine. And I'll send you an email and you can post them on the show notes and whatnot. But myrecoveryportal.com, UtahValleyCounseling.com, LasVegasCounseling.com. My podcast can be found anywhere that you get podcasts. It's called Pocket Therapist. I probably have lots of other resources that I can't remember right now. So,
yeah, just email them. I'll
send them to you.
And the Instagram handle where you're most active.
Yeah, where I'm most active is Dr. Adam Moore. So it's just DrAdamMoore, Dr. Adam Moore. And if here's the thing, if people will go on my Instagram and comment on, not just like, but if they will comment on my stuff and engage with me, I will engage back. I will follow them if whatever they're offering is something that I believe in or feel connected to in some way. But I will connect and I will be part of their community. I always tell people I'm your best friend on social media, because I'm the guy that will comment on every single one of your posts, and I'll make a meaningful comment on there, because that's how deeply I care about people. And you know, it's anybody that's going to invest with me, I will invest with them.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it and found it valuable, we would really appreciate your support by liking, rating, subscribing to the Early Days podcast. This program is produced and hosted by Dulo, that's me and Julian. And as we mentioned in the very beginning, we make non-iron dress shirts from performance fabrics. If you want to learn more, head over to weardulo.com, that's weardulo.com, and take a look at our products, our story, and the journey of how we're building the business. Until next time, bye-bye.